Com.
Well, it's been more than a week now since the Electric Express rolled out. And just last week, the new Camas commuter bus started up in the studio. With a look at how it's going, I have the transportation directors for both Summit County and Park City, Caroline Rodriguez and Alfred Knotts. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, Caroline, we've been keeping track of the riders on Electric Express. So what are they showing?
So Electric Express is carrying about 1,000 people a day and growing. We're so pleased. Just the other day, I actually rode with some visitors who were simply riding around to try out the bus and then see where they wanted to get off. So it's been really great.
Okay. So what are you hearing anecdotally? I mean, are people happy with it? Is it just because it's new? Maybe they're just riding it?
I think part of it is that it's new and the technology is so interesting. But I also think that the institution of this service really speaks to that we are meeting people's needs. They said we want to get in quicker with fewer stops, and that's exactly what this service does. So I think given that, people have really been willing to give it a try and make sure it works for them.
Yeah. So are you seeing it from transit center to transit center, or are people using it maybe just get off closer to the canyons?
I think it's a little bit of both. I've seen people get on and off at the canyons, but I've also seen people ride all the way through.
So when we say that 1,000 a day, I mean, how many bus trips is that? I mean, if we're running, gosh,
I might have to do the math on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's what, 6 buses an hour, right?
Let's see.
They do 4 actually right now. Yeah, and we have some on replacement and then have some on standby also. So, there's numbers that we look at when it comes to passengers per hour, passengers per trip, and that's information that, you know, we've only been operating just approximately a week, so we need to extrapolate that information. But I think what Caroline was saying also is people know that there'll be a bus every 10 minutes, so they're more apt to ride the bus. I rode it last week as well. I talked to my son, and my son's down at the skate park, and the next minute he's down at Kimball, and then now he's back at the skate park, and he's just kind of zipping around, and a lot of his friends are too.
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting is those passengers per hour, those types of performance measures that we look at, those have always been based purely cost-based and based on diesel and the amount of emissions. But because we're using this great new emerging technology, we're also going to have to look at how do we adjust our performance measures, because, you know, we're not paying any more in fuel costs by running more buses per hour. We're not emitting anything additional by running more buses per hour. So that's also going to be part of, you know, what we look at moving forward is how do we adjust our performance measures to then be able to report to the public our productivity in a different way that makes better sense for a purely electric service.
So any plans to somehow survey the ridership and find out what it is that, you know, they're happy about or think needs improvement? Or
yeah, we typically do surveys and get customer satisfaction surveys and then also ask people what their trip purpose is, what their trip type is, would they have driven their car, those types of things. So and how often they use the bus. So it's not just strictly qualitative data. You know, we want to get the quantitative data and qualitative as well and be able to compare those two.
Yeah. So any problems with the buses?
I haven't had anything reported. I know the first day we had a few overshoots on the actual charging, which was purely operator error. It wasn't anything with the buses or the charging, but I haven't heard of anything, any other problems in addition to that?
No.
Okay, but I was asking you guys because I heard about from somebody saying when he drives by the electric buses, he gets just this huge bloom of static through his car radio.
Which is interesting. And if other people encounter that, just email myself or Alfred, just so we can, keep track of that. Because that's something we wouldn't know about unless, you know, our riders or the people driving by are reporting that to us.
Sure. So when they overshot the charging stations, it means it just didn't get charged that round.
So then we have enough buses, so they just went around the block and tried it again, which was fine. But then it resulted in 2 or 3 buses stacked up at the transit center. But that's, you know, our drivers, these are totally new vehicles. Our drivers are learning to use them. So, you know, to be expected.
But no close calls of running out of juice.
No, not at all. And then we'll be installing a charger at the Old Town Transit Center also to have 2 chargers on each of the bookend of the routes.
Yeah. And then maybe some buses do Kimball, others do Old Town or something, just depending on the
correct. And we have we did choose to operate these on the 224 route just because of the elevation gain. So we'll start looking at how we can serve other areas with these types of vehicles that have a little more elevation gain, such as the Deer Valley routes.
Right. But they're also so big that I had heard that they can't really fit in the neighborhoods.
That is correct also. So that kind of goes, and I know you're probably going to ask about the downtowner and that service also, but that does go into kind of our micro transit model too, where we do want to be able to serve these areas with smaller, more nimble vehicles that operate at a much lower cost also.
Yeah, in terms of the lurch as you're on the bus and you're approaching the charging station, have you been able to kind of manage that?
That's just the drivers getting familiar with the vehicles. They do have a lot more torque. I did notice that also when I was riding it. So they're just getting used to how the acceleration works. There's definitely not any lag like there is with the combustion engine.
Yeah. So what are you finding? I mean, how many round trips can you make on a single charger? You never really have that chance because they're always getting charged.
Yeah, they're always getting topped off at the transit center on the Kimball side.
And then, as you mentioned, you're only using four and then just... You're just kind of rotating six?
Yeah, and if they get out of the cycle for the 10 minutes, they'll send another bus out. But the four has been able to meet the need. And then we always have something on standby in case there is an electrical problem or anything like that.
And any problem with people parking where they maybe should not be parking to grab one of the buses?
I haven't seen it so far. I mean, Richens is usually pretty close to capacity, so I've been seeing people parking there, but no illegal parking that I've noticed.
And then what about the parking because there were going to be like 45 spots or something at the transit center. Does that still need to be done?
It does still need to be done, and that's purely a matter of manpower. And our public works department has been working tirelessly to get everything ready for all of these new changes coming in, especially, you know, our public works guys are pouring a lot of the concrete pads for the bike share as well. So they're just really trying to get things done as fast as they can.
All right, let's move to the Camas line. What kind of riders do you see in that?
Yep, so over the first week, we had close to 100 riders, and that's, you know, a round trip. Our best day was Thursday, and we had over 30 riders. So it's been really great. People have been pleased. I've been hearing great feedback. Even my daughter, who comes into summer camp at here in Park City, took the bus with her camp counselor and some of her buddies and her bike, and she was super excited.
To, like, the Camas
yep.
pool?
She came in from the Camas area and took it right into town, got off at the high school. They walked their bikes over to camp and super excited to be riding the bus with Wi-Fi and using her tap-on card.
So how often is that bus running?
So that bus has 3 runs in the morning, inbound, and 3 runs in the evening. And then, of course, you can ride it outbound if you'd like as well.
And if somebody misses the bus back home, what do they do?
Yep. So we have a guaranteed ride home program. So you want to use a higher service of your choice, whether that's a taxi company, Uber, whichever that may be. Get yourself home and then go to parkcity.org/GRH and fill out a reimbursement form. Stands for guaranteed ride home.
Okay. Alfred, on Thursday, the city council decided to re-advertise the RFP for its micro transit contract. Do you expect anything different the second time around?
I do. I expect us to tighten up kind of the qualifications and then also the service parameters also that we can make sure that it's operating as it's intended and not operating as a taxi type of service also. That was the intent, but I think we just need to tighten up some things. Also look at our service areas. I know council and we had some public comment too about being able to serve Deep Park Meadows in those areas also. So be able to get some estimates on that from the service providers also by calling out those service areas specifically.
Yeah, so Downtowners was the one that the staff was was recommending and ready to go with, I think, the council. Do you expect to see something then from the local for hire drivers?
I would hope so. We've met several times over the last few weeks. I plan to meet with them, the kind of consortium again of the taxi folks, to sit down and make sure that they can provide some type of response to the qualifications also.
Okay. So what do those qualifications require?
It is to demonstrate experience that you can provide this type of service, that there's an app-based service too. So we want it to be electronic and to be able to schedule a trip or book a trip based on an app on your phone. Also to be able to provide the analytics that we need also. As Caroline mentioned, there's other service parameters and performance measures we monitor That service provider should be able to provide the same information that we collect as our transit system. And then, yeah, being able to demonstrate that you've done this in another community also. And then customer service is a big thing also. Our bus drivers are wonderful. They're ambassadors to our community, and we want any other service provider to have the same level of services that we provide to the customer also.
Are you requiring that they use electric vehicles?
The way it was structured last time, it wasn't a full-on requirement. They had to demonstrate that they couldn't provide the electric vehicle if they didn't provide, but everybody did provide some type of a electric vehicle in their proposal. So that's a big goal of the council and the community, and we're going to continue to push that. So we would require that they be electric or some type of alternative fuel vehicle.
Yeah, so it sounds like you've made it tougher than for the local taxi companies to participate in this, given that they don't have that experience of doing something like this. They certainly have the experience of being for hire drivers, but not this kind of program.
Correct. I mean, they could provide something that showed that they have a transition to a fleet, an electric fleet, and have a plan over a year or 2 years to provide that service electronically or some type of alternative fuel vehicle. So, yes, there are some limitations, but I think working together, I think just in general that group wants to start shifting towards environmentally friendly transportation as it is anyway and work better together too so they're not duplicating services. I think we've seen a lot of that in the taxi companies. Most of that just driven by the Uber and the Lyft model too, that they need to start working together a little bit better also just to be a successful business.
So when do those requests need to come in by?
We haven't reissued it yet, so I'm going to go back to council with a plan and schedule for not this council meeting, but the next council meeting. And during that time, be able to meet with the taxi folks also to kind of wrap my brain around the parameters that we've talked about with the taxi folks to make it a level playing field.
So are they happier, though, just that we're not going to provide taxi rides, that we're just going to be providing a ride to the transit stop?
Yes. Yes. And I think that's where it very much differentiates from that type of service. And as I said to council, I think I kind of dropped the ball on being able to make those parameters very tight. And that's why I want to make sure when we go back to the qualifications that those parameters are very tight and it's very clear on what this service is intended to serve.
And meanwhile, Caroline, my thinking is that the county's program actually kicks off Saturday, July 10th?
Yeah, actually, we had a little bit of delay in hiring drivers, so it's going to kick off sometime between July 17th and 24th, just depending on when they can get all their staff in order. We just want to make sure that their drivers, as Alfred alluded to, are up to par with our Park City Transit drivers. We want them also to be ambassadors of the transit system.
So the county did sign a contract with this Downtowners Incorporated.
Yes, we did. Mm-hmm. Yes, we did, for a circulator service.
And tell me about that. I mean, how is that different than what Park City would be offering?
So Park City is really looking at a first last mile connector to bring people to transit stops. The circulator operates more of a shopper shuttle so that people in the Kimball Junction area can park once but get to all the destinations they want. So we'll have two vehicles operating bi-directionally, which is basically in opposite directions, running every 15 minutes, and they'll be circulating through Transit Center, Redstone, New Park, outlets, Whole Foods, you know, in that area, and just a continuous circulation 13 hours a day, 7 days a week. So that way, instead of getting in your car, going to Whole Foods, getting in your car, going to Tanger, getting in your car, going to Walmart, you can just hop on the circulator because you know it's always coming.
And so is there some kind of app that you know when it's going to be there?
Nope. It's basically every 15 minutes, it's going to be there soon. It's a flag stop, and you'll see on the vehicles, they say, wave me down for a ride. So when you see the vehicle, just throw your arm in the air and the drivers know to pull over and pick you up.
All right. And are those areas marked in terms of where you wait for it?
Nope. It's any area on the circulator route, which will be on our website. Just please be safe. Please don't jump out in the middle of the street.
But would it come by like right in front of Walmart? I mean, where you walk out the door?
Yes, where you expect it. I mean, it's a logical service, so where you expect it to be in front of the doors and in accessible locations for you.
And then when they go out to the Tanger, I mean, would they drive all the way through the stores?
Yep, they're going to drive through and look for people.
Okay. Let's see. The county is not requiring electric vehicles, though?
So what we've said is that we prefer electric vehicles, but with the understanding that there are no market electric vehicles that are heavy duty that carry that many passengers right now, aside from those big 40-foot buses. So we've said, please transition to electric vehicles. We'll work together to identify them.
Okay. Real quick, before I let you go, the e-bike rollout, we're still shooting for the 14th on that?
Now it's the 19th.
Okay. And just because
of getting the station set, getting the cement to cure, getting the stations in, but 19th is a pretty firm date at this point. We feel like we have a good handle on it.
Okay, and what kind of bikes are we offering? It's just the one? Are they all pedal assist?
They are all pedal assist 88 bikes. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, do they have a throttle on
it? No throttle. It's called Pedelec. So once you start pedaling, if the bike feels you struggling at all, the pedal assist kicks in.
Okay, and they can go up to what, 20 miles an hour?
They can go faster than that, but we have set the speed to only assist up to 14.5 miles an hour.
All right, and then in terms of registration?
Yep.
Will be required to get onto one of those bikes.
Well, no, you can sign up at a kiosk, so you don't have to pre-register. Mm-hmm. But for locals or people who work locally, you'll want to go on and register for a locals or residence pass because it's cheaper and you get the biker for longer.
Okay. Anything else, guys, you wanted to mention?
4th of July. Just make sure you ride the bus, carpool, leave early. That's also a big component. Just plan your trip. And it will be $20 cash at China Bridge. That's new. So just plan ahead and make sure that you have a safe 4th of July.
Okay. By the time we talk next month, pretty much everything's going to be ruled out at that point, except for the on-demand.
Yeah. We'll be a little schedule behind on that and probably look into the fall to roll that out also, just so it makes sense for the service to coincide with route changes as well.
Okay. Yep. Alfred Knotts, Caroline Rodriguez, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time, 8:36. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Well, the Colville City Council voted a preliminary approval for a proposed development that could add significant density to the county seat, unanimously voting in favor of a 43-lot project, which the developer says will probably be called Chalk Creek Estates. In the studio with me, I have the mayor of Colville to talk about that, as well as some of the other issues in front of the county seat, Trevor Johnson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's see, that 43-lot project, Chalk Creek Estates, I mean, I think that's probably the first development project you guys have had in a while, huh?
It's been
certainly
a long
of that
time.
Size.
Yep, it's been a while.
I get you to turn that mic in front of you there.
Sure, sure.
There you go. And in terms, I mean, you've had maybe 1-2-lot projects?
Yeah, there's been some development here and there. There's been 3 or 4 here and 3 or 4 there. But in terms of a bigger size development, sure, this has been a while.
Yeah. So is there demand for it?
There is. Actually, there is. There's a pretty big demand. And actually, the last 4 years or so, we've been on a path to improve the infrastructure so we can even handle more growth, because it's been getting a little sketchy with the water situation, with the sewer situation. But having those things under control, now we're poised for growth and we can handle it.
Right. You expanded the sewer, mm-hmm. I recall. And what have you done with the water system?
So it's going to be rejuvenation pretty much from the top down, from source, storage, and delivery. We've run into some issues with source, not having enough water. The month of August has been hairy for us the last few years, as well as some of the people that wanted to build. We haven't been able to provide enough fire flow or water flow to meet minimum fire flow standards. And so upgrading those assets has helped in that area as well, so we can even handle growth.
Yeah, so, I mean, do you have the water then for the 43 lots?
It'll be built by time this is underway, yeah.
All right. So
we'll be able to handle it.
Is the property owner bringing water to the
Yeah, the they'll deal? Bring the yeah, they'll bring the infrastructure into their project. And this is, again, this is all preliminary. I don't know, there's been no final decision on this as far as the layout and the lots. He is going to phase it, is his proposal. So there'll be several phases, I think probably 12 to 15 houses over a 3-phase cycle.
Yeah. Are we talking single family?
Yeah.
With garages? Yeah. Mm-hmm. About how big? Any idea?
I don't have any idea. Again, these are single, this is a preliminary approval on the layout. I think the lot sizes range about a third acre, if I remember right.
Yeah, so
half to a third acre, yeah.
Any idea what the price point would be?
Have no idea, nope.
And these are located where?
So if you're familiar with the county fairgrounds, they're just east of the county fairgrounds, in between Chalk Creek Road and what we call Border Station Road there.
Yeah, so that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's a 21-acre parcel that he's dividing up.
Okay, do you expect to see more of this?
Boy, I hope so. I think when we're starting to get ready and poised for growth, I think that comes, and I welcome it. You know, there's some other efforts that we're making as a city to streamline process and procedures, make it more inviting for not only economical growth but residential as well.
Yeah. Also, at last week's meeting, a long debate about allowing a car wash on a parcel on Main Street at the intersection of Main Street and 100 South. Mm-hmm. That's basically the road that comes in from the interstate. Seemed to be a debate on whether you need another car wash in town, or is it more important to foster commercial business in Colville? What was your take on the discussion?
So I have a hard time. Turning away anybody that wants to take a chance in Colville economically or residentially, you know, growth with developers or on the economic side as well, businesses. And so my take, I mean, I was for the car wash. I think we, you know, like anything, we need to do it smart, make sure that those affected in the area around it are heard and they are, considered and cared for as well.
What was it, just concern by maybe another car wash owner that this one's just so convenient?
No, the concern was the issue was there was a provision in our ordinance that called out in this commercial zone, there could be any commercial building put on there except a car wash if it was next to a private property, a private residence. So that was a provision that was being debated at the council, is to take that out of the code. To go ahead and allow the car wash. There was very little debate or discussion about one car wash versus another. It was just whether to take that line out of the code or not.
And the reason it was put there originally was...
It's a very good question. Yeah, that's a very good question. It was put back in the early 90s. I went through all the minutes for the Planning Commission and the City Council minutes, and I couldn't find any real reason why that was put in there. And so instead of having that... Our hope is to make it a conditional use permit, and that would help with the surrounding neighborhood residents. You know, hours of operation, maybe a fence, certain lighting to minimize the impact on the neighbors.
And so, was that a final approval, or does it need to come back to council?
The decision to strike that line from the code was approved.
All right. And you've remarked one of your first jobs as mayor was to keep the county fair in town. What are your views of the county's plans to revamp the fairgrounds to date?
So that's been about a 4-year discussion there. And through that whole phase and that process, it's been proposed to put in a number of different areas. The final discussion was to go ahead and just reinvest in the current fair in its current location. And right now, they're going to do that in phases as well. And the first phase is after this fair, after this 2017 Summit County Fair, they're going to demolish the Quonset Hut, which is sort of the multicultural hall that we've got there, and then construct a multi-use building to hold events. There's also another component to it where the livestock barns, where they show the animals, they're going to redo those and upgrade those a little bit. And my understanding of that is phase one. Myself and another county or a city council member has been involved on a board that sort of navigates those efforts. So design and kind of what is going to go in and how it's going to be phased, and those sorts of things have been meetings that we've been to for a number of years, to be honest with you, at this point.
So you're thrilled, really? That
absolutely, yeah. Just completely happy with the county's decision to keep it in Colville. I appreciate the efforts on the part of the county manager as well as the county council members. I think they found a partner in Colville, and we're happy to be able to team up with them to make this effort happen.
Yeah, there was some talk early on about trying to, again, create multi-use areas. Mm-hmm. And I know with the North Summit Recreation District, they have not got the funding that they've looked to a couple of times now. So is there going to be some participation from the city of Colville or the North Summit Recreation
District? What it looked like early on was there was a coalition, and that was really driven by Colville City. There was a coalition between the city, the North Summit School District, the North Summit Recreation District, and the county. And we all came in with sort of an input on what the master plan looked like, and we chopped up sort of what our responsibilities would be. And our responsibility as a city was going to be the fair or the playground area. Maybe that meant a splash pad, those kinds of things. The North Summit Rec District was going to have some skin in the game with the multi-use field. And then the school district was going to be on board. A little bit less of an impact with the was something to do with the ball field, softball field, because they need a place to play softball for their girls softball. So that was a sort of the wish list, the full package if we were to get that. It was a little bit disappointing that the tax was turned down for the North Summit Rec District, and that sort of maybe sent a shockwave up to the county council, where they thought, hey, maybe we need to pull back a little bit on an effort, start phasing these things. And so that's where the concept of the phasing came in. The city still can be a part of that in the second or third phase. I don't remember which one. And so when that starts coming up and when they start remodeling, some of the areas will be involved at that point.
Wanted to ask you what Colville's doing for 4th of July.
4th of July. Well, we just had our, we call it a Colville City Barbecue Festival. That was the 17th of June. Hennifer, our neighbor, puts on a really good 4th of July celebration, and there's a lot of the members or the citizens of Colville that go down and attend that. I'll be there as well. So we take a break on the 4th, and we get geared up for the fair.
Yeah. Has the city banned fireworks like Park City has?
In our ordinance, the July 1st, there's a fire and fireworks restriction within city limits until September. However, the 4th and the 24th of July, fireworks are permitted.
Okay.
For those two holidays.
All right. And then just, I know with the notice of the Colville mink ranch, you're filing suit against Colville City along with Summit County. I'm guessing you can't say much given that that's a lawsuit in front of you.
What I can say is, number one, we haven't been served with any sort of lawsuit. I have heard the rumors. I don't know really what impact Colville would have, because it's over an event that the county put on at the county fairgrounds. And so really that's got nothing to do with Colville. But again, until I even see the suit, I have no idea what to comment on it.
Okay. So. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Well, I appreciate your time and efforts with inviting me on. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate you driving over.
You bet.
That's the mayor of Colville, Trevor Johnson. You're listening to Local News Hour here on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:47. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, coming up on Friday, local photographer Tom Kelly, certainly also the voice of U.S. Ski and Snowboarding, will open up a new exhibit at Artique that's located in downtown Camas. He joins me now in the studio to tell us more. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie. Beautiful 4th of July shaping up here.
Yeah, it sure is. So your exhibit is called Light, Land, and Sky. You're going to have how many pieces in the exhibit?
Well, I decided to take a little bit of a different approach putting together this gallery show out at Artique this year, and I have just 10 or 11 images, and that's it, and really focused on some of the favorites of mine from the last few years, a lot of these from the local area, some from out and about around the world, and just things that really combined what I see in light emanating from the sky and illuminating the land, and trying to think of a clever title, and Light, Land, and Sky, it really sums up what photography is about.
Yeah, so every one of the prints has all three elements then, huh?
Pretty much. There were a few that were borderline. We did a little selection process, but in the end, and I think anybody who is a photographer and has wandered up to Bonanza Flat, to Empire and Guardsman, and kind of watched the sunset, and particularly with the fall foliage, you know, you just see the beautiful sky that we have here with the clouds. I was just photographing at sunrise this morning out in Silver Creek, and beautiful clouds out there, and the light that we get emanating from the sky is really the energy that fuels all of us, particularly those of us who live out here in the mountains.
Yeah, and as I kind of scrolled through them quick, it looked like they were all local except for maybe one in the Austrian Alps.
Yeah, pretty much all of them are local. We've got some things from Snake Creek Canyon, a few from up in Bonanza Flat. We've got some from out in the Weber Canyon. Got one from Austria that's just one of my all-time favorites. And this was during the Solden World Cup races a few years ago, a good excuse to get up in the mountain pre-dawn. And I just had this beautiful pastel layering as you look back down towards Italy. And for those who have been in that part of the world, the Dolomites by air are only about 50 or 60 miles. And you could actually see the craggy, rocky Alps alpine peaks of the Dolomites in the distance in this beautiful pastel dawn, as I call it.
Okay. So Arctic is located, as I mentioned, downtown Camas, but what is that on Center Street? That's on 32.
Yeah, right? It's right on the main highway in the north end of town. You can't miss it. Wonderful little gallery that Katie Stelpflug has put together, celebrating its sixth anniversary recently. The gallery is open every day, year-round, from 11 to 6 on Thursday through Sunday. And one of the traditions that Katie started at Arctic was to have a First Friday celebration every month, and she's continued that on now for 6 years. So there's a featured artist every Friday, the first Friday of the month. This year it falls on Friday, July 7th, and I'm very honored to be the featured artist of the month for July.
Well, it's a small shop, and it filled with other pieces. So do you have just room for yours, or does all the other stuff come down? Or
no, pretty much everything's there. There are over 20 artists involved in somewhat like a little bit of a cooperative in Camas. Some amazing work out there. I was just out there this weekend and just marveling at some of the work of these local artists. So we have a nice display. And one of the things that I decided to do this year, instead of having this wide array of different prints and all these different sizes of frames, I decided to go with canvases. So all of the prints that are on display are large format canvases, 20 by 30, a few 16 by 24s, and a couple of odd sizes. Folks can order other sizes, but I wanted to have something that was really consistent and really showcase the images. So you can kind of stand back and look at either wall at Arctic and see some really, at least in my opinion, wonderful images that evoke a lot of memories of places. And I think people, as they look around, they'll say, hey, you know, I've been there.
All right. Again, so it opens Friday. People are welcome to come out and say hello, and then it'll remain open through the end of the month.
Yeah, that's correct. Opening is this Friday, July 7th, and we'll have a public reception from 6 to 9. This is one of the best parties in Camas, and invite everybody to come out. We'll have a live entertainment, we'll have food, and you'll be able to meet friends, and usually have quite a few people out there. The gallery is very small, but it spills out onto the sidewalk and out of the yards alongside it. We'll also have a few tents there and music, so invite everybody out to Camas, Arctic, 6 to 9 this Friday.
Great. Hey, real quick, while I got you here, I know you guys are just coming off a busy, your Congress? Is that what you have every summer?
Well, we just completed our U.S. Ski and Snowboard Partner Summit, and we had our International Ski Federation meeting shortly before that. So people think, it's springtime and things really quiet down, but one of the busiest times of year for us actually are the months of April, May, and June, the first part of June anyways, where we're setting the plans for next year. Now it's really pretty quiet. A lot of teams training out of the Center of Excellence and around the world right now. Big news is that we're getting ready to put our Project Jumped airbag in. In fact, it is going in right now again today. The last few days have been the final stages of construction. We have our first camp starting out there coming up later this week. This is, if you get a chance to wander out there, this is located right behind the Alfangen Ski Museum up on that pitch. And this is an amazing, amazing facility. So instead of jumping off into the water where you have that really hard surface, you're jumping off into an airbag. And we feel that even with the few months we're going to get in here this summer, that it will be a difference maker for some of our athletes who go to Pyeongchang this year. We first saw this over in Japan a few years ago, and we've been wanting to get one in America. There aren't many of these around the world, so this will become a very big training asset for our acrobatic athletes.
And I'm wondering, I mean, is it just kind of a mental thing, knowing you're coming off that and you're going to hit the water hard, that maybe they pull back a little bit, and this, with the airbag, maybe can really let loose? I don't know.
Well, it's, with repetitive work, I mean, the pool is great. You have the bubble system and everything, mm-hmm. but this is going to allow them to really do different things. They're actually a little bit accustomed to going into airbags, too. Airbags have been used for some years on snow as well. Sean White used one here going back to 2010 when he was training at Park City Mountain. So it's one of myriad things. We also have the foam pit out at the Center of Excellence. So there's a variety of ways that the athletes can train, but we feel that the types of tricks that they'll be able to do off of these jumps into the airbag are going to really elevate the training and give them a better opportunity when they get to Pyeongchang.
Yeah. Real quick, I mean, are you guys even thinking about Pyeongchang in terms of just North Korea? Any concerns about the potential there? I mean, we hear in the news, it seems like once a month, about how they're busy testing their missile range.
You know, it's interesting because I think back a lot to the discussions we had about this time in Sochi, because we had similar concerns, albeit a different type of threat. It's certainly something that we're thinking of and that we're preparing for together with the U.S. Olympic Committee and other authorities. We don't talk about it a lot, but it is something for sure that we do think about and we do plan for. And in our planning meetings, it is something that that we do look at.
You know, I had heard an NPR story recently about how South Korea had invited North Korean athletes, have not heard back anything from them.
You know, this is an interesting concept, and I've been following that as well, and I don't know that it will go anywhere, but let's remember that the original principles of the Olympics going back to 776 BC really was a time when the war stopped and people came together in the field of sport. It's changed a lot over the years, but I hope that some of those principles still come to pass, and that people will respect the Olympics, and that feuding nations will also respect what the games are about.
Okay. Tom, again, you'll be out with Art Teak with Light, Land, and Sky Friday evening. Hey,
great.
Thanks for coming
by. Yeah, come on by, folks. Thanks.